Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. So far this week, we've talked about, the shooting in Parkland, Florida, last week. We talked about gun control and the issue with the overall discussion of gun control. Then we talked yesterday about mental health and those and issues regarding mental health as it relates to mass shootings and gun ownership and those kinds of issues. And today we're going to talk about public policy. Some legal things. Mm-hmm. Now we posted a correction in the show notes of yesterday's podcast because there was a mistake.
Right. I had read an article by Tom Friedman, a journalist who does his homework, and in the article he said it's illegal to own a. We're talking about gun ownership,
right?
And in the article he said it's illegal to own a machine gun. Mm-hmm. He would, you know, we have
politifacts,
you know.
Yeah.
So we gave him half true, right. You know. It's half true, and that to me is the essence of this whole gun issue. Mm-hmm. You know, the confusion,
right.
Because there are so many nuances to every issue, and that's why we are approaching this issue of gun ownership and gun control the way we are this week. Mm-hmm. Is that what we've been saying is that there is no single solution.
Right.
There are many facets to this issue.
Mm-hmm.
We're discussing several, and with each facet, there are more facets within that,
right?
Okay, and so whether we're talking about gun control is one facet, one aspect. Mental illness is one aspect, but there are many issues within mental illness.
Right.
Okay, and so when I said yes, I mentioned yesterday that it's illegal to own machine guns in the United States. It's true in a way.
It's true.
It's partly true.
Right, partly true.
Right.
In 1986, President Ronald Reagan signed the Firearm Owners Protection Act. And in that act, it denies citizens the right to purchase machine guns manufactured after 1986.
Now, when you talk about a complication, you talk about a convoluted mess.
Right. Okay. If it was made in 1985, no worries.
Okay.
As long as you have a permit, you can get it.
And here's the funny thing about that. So we have Ronald Reagan, who's this conservative icon, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And Congress, he just signed the law. Congress, mm-hmm. in 1986, developed this law. And the title of it is the Firearm Owners Protection Act. So
FOPA.
What does that tell you? We want to protect the rights of gun owners,
mm-hmm.
okay? Which is okay.
Right.
But gun owners are a percentage of the population.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have anything wrong with protecting their rights, as long as we protect everybody's rights.
Right.
Okay. So I have a little bit of trouble with that. The second thing is, why this convoluted mess about prior to 1986, mm-hmm. after 1986?
Right.
Because what it does, and I think, and talk about a compromise. The bill was signed into law in 86.
Right.
That's why it's 1986. It's mm-hmm. nothing to do with the gun. But the same
right.
gun was produced in 85
right.
and 86. What the law does is it makes guns manufactured before 1986 very expensive.
Right.
Okay, so we say very expensive. It's a few thousand dollars.
So there's not a whole lot of them.
Right, because there aren't that many, and they were already distributed.
Mm-hmm.
So this says any gun after 1986, and then there are restrictions.
Right.
Okay, so what the law did is it said, yes, you can purchase a machine gun, but we're going to make it really difficult and expensive for you to do that.
Right.
Not as expensive as buying one before 1986.
Right.
But we're going to make it very difficult for anybody to buy a machine gun
right.
made after 1986.
Right.
It's really purchased after 1986.
Right.
But.
And interestingly, that same act prohibited the modification of any weapon to turn it into an automatic weapon. And so all this talk now about bump stocks, that law signed by President Reagan in 1986 prohibited the modification of a firearm by a civilian into anything that makes it into an automatic.
Right. What these bump stocks, they're also called slide stocks, do is that they accept the movement of the gun back and forth. And so all you have to do is hold your finger on the trigger,
right,
and the gun itself will keep firing because of the bump stock. So this issue of bump stocks and modifications is not new. In fact, the conservative icon, Ronald Reagan, and that Congress was instrumental in limiting, prohibiting the use of those sorts of things, which are now routinely used.
Right.
Okay. Suddenly they've become acceptable. So it's the modification, because you can easily turn a semi-automatic weapon into an automatic weapon with these modifications.
Right.
Another modification is a silencer.
Mm-hmm.
And silencers come under these same restrictions.
Yeah.
So is it legal? Yes, it's legal, but they're highly restricted purchases.
Right.
So we do have attempts by the federal government to make some restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, I mean, if Ronald Reagan's willing to make those restrictions, I think other people should be too. I mean, there's nothing new about restrictions.
Yeah. So that was the correction from yesterday, but it kind of goes along very well with what we're going to talk about today. But I think that we should, the most prudent place to begin is with the Second Amendment.
Sure. Anytime you talk about public policy, you have to begin with what are the federal laws?
Right.
Okay. And in this case, the federal laws, the largest is the Second Amendment.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the Second Amendment, as it is typically quoted, says that we have the right to bear arms. However,
it's a little bit like owning machine guns.
Right. That's not the entire sentence.
Let alone the entire intent.
Right. The entire sentence says that we have the right to bear arms in a well-organized militia.
A well-regulated militia.
Well-regulated militia. Mm-hmm. So there is some level of interpretation, is that fair to say, that could be applied to the Second Amendment to say, well, we have the right to own and bear arms as long as we're part of a militia, as long as we're involved in a well-regulated militia.
Why did the Founding Fathers word it that way? Because in 1789, we didn't have a standing army.
Right.
That's why we have a constitution, in fact, because under the Articles of Confederation, you had 13 sort of loosely organized states.
Right.
Okay? You didn't really have a federal government. But the Founding Fathers recognized very early that it wasn't, we needed a federal government, we needed to be able to collect taxes, and the government itself needed to have some strength, hence the Constitution. But in 1789, when the Constitution was ratified, we didn't have a standing army.
Mm-hmm.
Each colony, now each state, had a militia. You had a state militia.
Mm-hmm.
And the state militia was comprised of volunteers in that state,
right,
who owned a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought their gun to the militia.
Right.
And that happened until the Civil War.
Right.
That's when it really changed in large numbers, was the war between the states. But prior to that, I would volunteer for my state's militia. So they would call us up. Paul Revere would come riding through the country and said, hurry up, get your guns, come to the bridge because the British are coming.
Mm-hmm.
So you grab your gun off the mantle or out of the corner,
right,
and you go become part of your state's militia and defend that territory, that area. That's the well-regulated militia.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody who was in the militia, they were in the militia because they owned a gun. If you didn't own a gun, you probably wouldn't be in the militia.
Right.
And so What the government was doing in 1789 was saying, we have to maintain this right, because if we're ever invaded again, we have to be able to defend ourselves. Nobody was worried about the federal government invading anybody. It was if England comes back, which they did in 1812,
right,
we need to have this militia that's armed, and we don't want to take those arms away, because if we take them away, then we're not going to be able to defend ourselves from an invading force.
Right.
Okay. That's what the intention was.
Right. So so it's interpreted differently.
A few things have happened since 1789.
Right. So it is. So the interpretation of that is. Well, I guess it's just fair to say that there's different interpretations of that, because it is, you know, we have heard repeatedly that amendment, the Second Amendment, interpreted multiple times to suggest that we have the right as private citizen individuals to own guns as a constitutional right. And it's a little bit different than that.
Interpretation is the key,
mm-hmm.
Okay, because if you just take that first phrase, the right to bear arms,
right.
People say, well, then I have a right to own a gun, okay? But if you get a Supreme Court someday
mm-hmm.
that says, in a well-regulated militia, and they take a very conservative interpretation,
mm-hmm.
they would say, no, you don't have a right to own a gun. You have a right to bear arms if you're in a well-regulated militia.
Right.
That would be called the United States Army today.
Mm-hmm.
Or the National Guard,
mm-hmm.
okay? And it could just as easily be interpreted that way.
Right.
Right now it's interpreted as everybody can own a gun. It could just as easily switch and, no, you can only own a gun if you're in a militia.
Right.
Okay? So we need to be careful about how we interpret these things, because
right.
a Supreme Court could reinterpret the
right.
Second Amendment.
Right.
And say, no, you have to be in a militia if you want to own a gun.
Right. And again, as we talked about earlier this week, the likelihood, the probability of either camp, again, we have the camp of everyone should have a gun and the camp of no one should have a gun, the likelihood of either of those camps actually coming to pass, coming to reality, is very small.
Right.
But again, depending on interpretation, you know, we could be, it could very easily be interpreted with the nobody has a gun unless you're part of the military camp,
right.
versus the, well, everyone has the right to a gun.
Right.
It's complicated.
And you know, there was every time there's a tragedy like this, it's, we need to have gun control.
Mm-hmm.
And the response to that is, no, I have a right. The Constitution gives me the right because I need to have a weapon in case my government
right.
tries to limit my rights or
mm-hmm.
take my gun or whatever,
right.
okay? Let's go back to 1789.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had a musket, and if the government tried to take your musket, they would come with muskets.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had the same weaponry.
Right.
Okay. When the colonists came to Concord Bridge with their muskets, they faced a British force with muskets. So when people today say, I need my automatic, semi-automatic, whatever, to defend against a tyrannical government,
mm-hmm.
if the United States military decides to take over New York City, they're not going to bring AR-15s.
Right.
They're going to bring Apache attack helicopters.
Right.
And tanks and F-16s.
Right.
Your AR-15 or machine gun or whatever you bring to the battle,
mm-hmm.
I don't think is going to intimidate the United States Marines.
Right.
And their firepower.
Right.
Okay. So this whole thing about I need it to protect myself from a government, from tyrannical United States government, really doesn't make any sense.
It's really difficult to
I mean, please,
wrap your head around that as a viable argument.
Was it Red Dawn? Was that movie Red Dawn where the kids went up in the woods and
mm-hmm.
defended themselves against some
the Russians?
I mean, it makes nice movies, you know,
mm-hmm.
but please think about this for a moment. You're not going to defend against the federal government if the federal government decides to take over a city.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to bring firepower that
right.
you don't even know exists.
Right.
And your little automatic weapon.
Well, we gave the
is going to go up in smoke.
And we gave them a lot more money this year to.
And Donald Trump has made sure that they're going to get more firepower.
Yeah,
you know, so we're talking about a very different set of circumstances today than we had in 1789. I mean, there were many things in 1789 that we've changed. We had prohibition at one point, so we did away with it. Right. Things change, okay? So the circumstances that produced the Second Amendment simply don't exist today.
Right.
So when, but again, it's a complicated discussion, and it's open to interpretation. Our Constitution is a living document.
Right.
We change it. I don't know how the founding fathers knew to do that.
Right.
But they made a document that could be changed.
And, I think it's
and
because,
therein lies its strength.
I think it's because they were from the future and they knew that
aliens. You watch the History Channel.
That's right. Ancient aliens.
Ancient aliens.
No.
No, but but again, it's a complicated issue.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the answer to the Second Amendment is, but I know it's open to interpretation.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And it depends how you interpret those words.
Right. And so we have the Second Amendment, and then over the years, in the 1930s, in the 1960s, and then 1986, as we mentioned earlier, and even more recently, there have been revisions to various acts that have been developed and passed in regards to gun ownership. The recent one, the 1986 one signed by President Reagan, the Firearm Owners Protection
Firearm Owners Protection Act.
Yes, FOPA, Firearm Owners
FOPA.
Protection
yeah.
Act. Mm-hmm. Much of that act is still intact and is still used. And in fact, it's from that act that we get many of the questions that are asked on the forms when you are, you know, applying to purchase a weapon, a gun. There's a firearm transaction record that you have to complete. And there are questions in there because the other thing that act did was it identified individuals who are disqualified from being able to purchase a firearm.
They're called prohibited people or prohibited individuals.
Right.
They very specifically said, unless you're a prohibited person.
Right.
And then they specify what a prohibited person is. The interesting thing about this is that the government did make an attempt.
Mm-hmm.
And it has worked. Okay?
Right.
It's not like, oh, we've tried this before and it doesn't work. No. We've done this twice before, and it has worked both times.
Right.
Okay. Once in 1934, once in 1986, where we placed restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The government has done that. Congress has done that in the past, and it has done so successfully.
Right. So just, and I just want to review a couple of a few of the restricted groups. One of them is, as we all know, anyone who has been convicted of a felon.
Right. If you're convicted of a felony, you don't qualify.
Right.
Okay. And we can check because there are records.
Right.
We can check court records.
And it's a little bit more specific because it says, are you under, and I'm reading from the actual transaction record. It says, are you under indictment or information in any court for a felony or any other crime for which the judge could imprison you for more than 1 year?
Right.
So you technically don't even have to be convicted. You just have to be indicted or charged in an active case.
That's right. You may be innocent, but if the charges have been levied against you, that's sufficient to deny you access to a weapon.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the next one, of course, is if you've been convicted of a felony.
Right.
Then there's another one that is, and I'm going to skip that one and come back to that one in just a second.
Right.
If you've been dishonorably discharged from the military, you're not allowed to have it. This one, I think, is interesting. If you've ever been convicted in any court of a misdemeanor crime of domestic violence.
Right.
So here we have a conviction of a misdemeanor that could prohibit you from purchasing a weapon. We typically think of felonies, but if you've been convicted of a misdemeanor charge of domestic violence, you could be restricted from owning a weapon or purchasing a weapon. The other one is, are you subject to a court order restraining you from harassing, stalking, or threatening your child or an intimate partner or child of such partner? So now we know that when you're under the restrictions of a restraining order or something like that, then you can't purchase any weapons. But it's mentioned pretty specifically here. But the two that I think are the most interesting, one is related to yesterday, yesterday's discussion, and it says, have you ever been adjudicated as a mental defective, or have you ever been committed to a mental institution?
Right. Now, this is 1986.
Right.
So,
well, this is the revision from October 2016.
But mental defective, okay, that's a term that is rarely used in our business.
Right. Well, those terms are still used legally.
In legal terms, right. They're legal.
Right.
Yeah. But again, when we talk about mental illness, you know, are we talking about legal? Remember yesterday? When we talk, are we talking about legal or are we talking about mentally ill?
Right.
Because again, there's a little bit of overlap, but there's some exclusions.
Right. So some interesting things about this is the first part says adjudicated mental defective. Okay. So that means that that goes along with that idea of have you ever been put in a situation where the courts have declared you to be mentally incompetent. Basically.
Right.
And so this goes along with that. Now, I don't know if this form is going to change now that President Trump has repealed that decision about the mental...
you mean the executive order that he signed in secret?
Yes.
10 days after being inaugurated?
I think that's the one.
Yeah, all this fanfare that he has about slashing his name across executive orders and then holding them up for the cameras. The executive order that he used to rescind that prohibition has never been, those photographs have never been released.
Right. But that was a part of this 1986 act that President Reagan signed.
Reagan restricted it.
Right.
Very specifically restricted access to people who were in that. And then President Trump took it away.
Right. And the second part is, have you ever been committed to a mental institution? Now, here in Florida, we call that a Baker Act. And so that, to me is a very interesting one because I know for a fact that there are many people who have been Baker acted, meaning that they have been involuntarily hospitalized for mental and emotional issues that have purchased weapons after being Baker acted.
That's right. So, and I know people who have been Baker acted who should not have been Baker acted.
Exactly.
And what do we do with them? There are people who were mistakenly, that people assumed that they weren't a threat, and they were Baker acted because a family member was angry or wanted to get revenge, and so they called the police and had them Baker acted.
Right.
What do you do with those people who were Baker acted unnecessarily?
Or people who were Baker acted as a child.
As a child, that's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
You know, you Baker act a 7 or 8 year old because they have a temper tantrum. Then does that disqualify them for the rest of their life?
Exactly. And then the last one here is, are you an unlawful user of or addicted to... Those are two different. Unlawful user of or addicted to marijuana or any depressant, stimulant, narcotic drug, or any other controlled substance. In bold, it says, warning. The use or possession of marijuana remains unlawful under federal law, regardless of whether it has been legalized or decriminalized for medical or medicinal or recreational purposes in the state where you reside. So, if you use marijuana
in
anywhere,
Colorado,
even in regardless of whether it's been decriminalized or approved for medicinal purposes, this law would prohibit you from purchasing able to purchase a weapon.
Even though the activity is legal in 23 states, this would nullify you'd be on the prohibited person list. So when we talk about, it's a complicated issue.
Right.
Let's not boil this down to school safety, mental illness, gun control. It's far more complicated than that. Just here, just as just this single issue. This is form. Look how complicated
right.
it is.
Okay, right.
That doesn't include the debate about the Second Amendment.
Right.
You know, but here's this form. We've had two laws. What we're saying is, though, I think that one of the points to be made is that in 1934, there was another act signed, National Firearms Act.
Right.
Okay. Why was it signed? Because in 1934, you had these gangsters running around the country. We didn't talk about St. Valentine's Day Massacre. I wrote that little blog about that the other day. But in 1934, you had gangsters running around with Thompson machine guns.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the federal government said, we got to do something about this. This is crazy, guys running around with machine guns. So in 1934, the federal government made it illegal to own a machine gun.
Okay. Right.
So there is this precedent for gun control, and it has worked because it did get, now gangsters of course kept their machine guns, but it made it illegal for everybody else to have machine guns. So at least we didn't have machine gun wars in the middle of our cities in the 30s and 40s. Now, Reagan comes along in 86, not Reagan, but Congress, and there was a change of heart, and they said, well, let's at least protect it to this extent. Okay. So, but again, it's an effort. It's at least an effort at control, at some type of control. So when people say, somebody said, I didn't hear this on the news, but somebody commented yesterday that that I don't know whether it was in the state of Florida or in Washington, said gun control is not on the table.
Mm.
Any effort to restrict gun ownership is not on the table. Now, I don't know whether that was really said. I don't know whether somebody said that or not. But
it has been said before.
But you can't begin with that kind of a comment. You can't begin by saying, we're not going to discuss this aspect of things.
Right.
No. We have elected, you all have to put everything on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Not y'all. You all. Everybody. Everybody there in Tallahassee or Washington. You have to put everything on the table.
Right. Well, and I think that the sort of moral of this story, or the overarching mission that we have for this topic today, is to say that while this is a complicated issue, and while I completely get the argument that, well, you know, criminals don't buy guns legally anyways.
Right.
You know, the criminals are still going to have the guns.
Sure.
In 1934, when that was signed, it prohibited machine guns from citizens.
Right.
And did it stop the use of machine guns the next day? No. Mm-hmm. Did it stop it the next year? No.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not still using machine guns.
Right.
So over time, such a restriction limited and eventually eliminated the use of machine guns for some of these crimes.
Mm-hmm.
So is it going to have an immediate effect? Probably not. Will it have an eventual effect? Perhaps. And I think that it's really important to remember that, yes, criminals will have guns, will find a way to get guns illegally.
Okay. Just like we found ways to get alcohol during Prohibition.
But it doesn't mean that you shouldn't have rules that regulate it. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't have restrictions and guidelines for the use and the selling and the purchasing of weapons. You know, there's a rule against drinking alcohol under the age of 21.
Right.
Does that mean that no one under the age of 21 drinks alcohol? Of course not. We know that there's plenty of people who under the age of 20, but everybody under the age of 21 doesn't. And because there's a rule against it, means that many people under the age of 21 won't drink because they know it's against the law.
And I think that's a really good example, is that there are many other products that we have restrictions.
Right.
That we place restrictions on. Marijuana, cigarettes, alcohol. We could come up with many others.
Driving.
It's not going to stop.
Right.
But you make it restrictive, as you can. You make it prohibit it.
Right.
So that kids who are buying alcohol with fake IDs, they know that they're taking a risk.
Right.
And not all teenagers are going to take that risk.
Right.
If you remove the risk, then you're opening up the floodgates.
Right.
What kept me from doing that? I didn't want to get caught. People say all the time, I tried marijuana, but I was frightened. I was scared. I was paranoid that I was going to get caught.
Mm-hmm.
It's that restriction,
right,
that prohibition,
mm-hmm,
that you can't do. In Florida, it doesn't matter how old you are, you're not allowed to smoke marijuana.
Right.
Okay. And that, in fact, does keep some, mm-hmm, people from trying it.
Right.
Remove that restriction, I suppose more people will try it.
Right.
So the government, state, local, and federal governments have already successfully done these kind,
right,
of things before. There's no reason to put guns in a separate category.
Right.
That's all we're saying.
Right.
Have your hunting rifles. Well, it's okay. But let's not put guns in a category of it,
right,
of their own.
And if we just think about the shooting from last week, Nicholas Cruz. Okay, we know that he used an assault rifle.
Mm-hmm.
We know that he purchased the assault rifle legally.
Mm-hmm.
Would he have, let's say that he would have performed this horrible act anyways. Had it not been legal for him to purchase an assault rifle,
mm-hmm,
would the casualty count be, mm-hmm, what it was? Would everything have gone down the way that it did?
No.
The probability is that it would have been different,
right,
because, you know, that weapon afforded the extent of injuries to be much greater than it would be, mm-hmm, with other,
right,
even with other weapons. Okay, so but it was legal for him to buy it, and so,
right,
you know, would he have gone through whatever avenues he would have had to go through to purchase it illegally?
Mm-hmm.
He I guess he could. But the probability, sure, is that he probably wouldn't.
He wouldn't. And whoever was going to sell it to him knew that they were that person was,
right,
taking risk. Man, if I sell this to this kid, I don't know who he is.
Right.
But if he does something stupid and I get dragged into it,
mm-hmm,
I'm going to jail.
Right.
Okay? So that's why you put these in,
right,
in place. I was listening to a program the other day. I was driving somewhere and I was listening to this program. And it was a gun advocate.
Mm-hmm.
He was an expert on what to do if you're in a shooting,
mm-hmm,
okay, how to respond. And one of the things he said was, if the person has to stop to reload, that's the time,
right,
when they're most vulnerable,
right,
when the shooter is most vulnerable, if they have to stop to reload, okay,
right,
because they're,
right,
they're thinking about something else, okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a musket...
Right.
Think about it. That's what 1789, that's the Second Amendment.
Right.
Okay. If you have a musket, you get one shot.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to get another one if you're, mm-hmm, shooting at 10 people, because by the time you reload,
right,
they're going to be on you. Even if you have one bullet at a time, we had hunting guns in our house. I think the largest capacity was 5 cartridges,
mm-hmm,
in one of those guns. So you could do 5, then you had to stop and start reloading.
Mm-hmm.
That makes the shooter vulnerable.
Right. Yeah.
But when you can shove 30 into a magazine...
Right. And then you can change magazines in 2 seconds.
In a couple of seconds. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're talking about very different... All we're saying is, let's have a discussion,
right,
based on what exists, not in 1789.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's go back to... Parents will often say, well, I know what it's like to be a teenager today, you know.
Mm.
No, you don't.
No.
Because you didn't have Instagram and Snapchat. And I say to people, what kind of computer did you use,
mm-hmm,
when you were growing up? When you were in third grade, did you have an iPad? No. You,
right,
you lived in a different world.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about 2018, not 1789.
Right.
Okay, that's all we're saying. Now, where the conversation ends and what we all agree to,
mm-hmm,
I have no way to predict. But let's at least have the discussion.
Right.
Let's not begin by saying, no, this is off the table.
Right.
Or let's give it more time. We don't need more time. Enough,
right,
people have been slaughtered. We don't need any more time to get the facts, as Paul Ryan said the other. We have to get the facts. Forget about the facts. We have to have a discussion.
Right.
Okay.
We have enough facts.
And it's time for politicians to have that discussion.
Right.
And again, I credit these kids. Who are angry and,
mm-hmm,
who are expressing their anger.
Right.
And kudos to you for getting our attention, for
Absolutely.
Getting the attention of adults. It is time that the adults get off their hands and have a real discussion about this issue.
Absolutely. And tomorrow we're going to talk about the issue of safety.
Yeah.
Because we got to talk about what that means.
Yeah. We have to let's not talk about guns. Let's talk about school safety. Let's talk about school safety. But
yeah,
it's one of those facets that we have to discuss.
Absolutely. So until then.
Sorry about raging about.
Until then.
I think we need to be passionate about this. I think everybody. I think, you know what I'd like to see?
Tell me.
I'd like to see every school kid in Florida go to Tallahassee.
That'd be a lot of kids.
And say, we've had it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want it. We don't want this to happen anymore.
Right.
Imagine if 10 million kids or 3 million or 100,000 kids descended upon Tallahassee next week.
Mm-hmm.
We'd get some action.
That'd be recognized.
You know, and it's too bad that we have to rely on children to bring us to our senses.
Mm-hmm.
But that would get everybody's attention. And I cannot give these young people enough credit for standing up and confronting the adults who are standing in the way.
Yeah.
So
that can't happen because the FSA test is coming up soon, and so they have to get ready for that.
Actually, I was thinking we also ought to have a march about the... I wish students would rebel against the FSA.
Yeah.
That's the only way you get rid of it. Parents and students would rebel if they would say, we're not doing this anymore. The state would have to back down from this craziness of...
I didn't mean to mention
high stakes
that for you
testing. No, it's just stupid. I mean, high stakes testing is just stupid. And everybody knows it. I mean, everybody in education knows it's stupid. But we keep doing it. Why? Because I don't know why we do it.
I can always tell when you're really frustrated because you don't make eye contact. You avoid eye contact when you're really upset. This is going to be fun. But we will talk more about safety tomorrow. And we'll talk about FSA another day. Until then, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.
At least stay healthy and forget to be afraid. Let's get angry about something like high stakes testing and gun control.
I don't know what to do with you, man.
Oh.
Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We would be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening, have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning.